So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time. Waiting for tonight. Oh. So, take a look.
Every major sport has their special event. The NFL has the Super Bowl. Major League Baseball has the World Series. The World Wrestling Federation has WrestleMania.
WrestleMania is the biggest show by the biggest company in the entire world for sports entertainment.
To a lot of fans, it's bigger than the Super Bowl. To me, it's certainly bigger than the Super Bowl.
WrestleMania is called the granddaddy of them all. And you stand on the grandest stage of them all. It's that time of year when you're on the card at WrestleMania that you stand before millions of people and you stand before your peers, and it lets people know that you mean something.
That's the ultimate dream, is that bell rings and you're standing across the ring looking at another guy, and you guys are the main event at the biggest event that there is. It couldn't mean anymore.
Having that spot means everything to me.
WrestleMania 3 was the greatest moment of my life. 93,000 people in the Pontiac Silverdome. When I got Andre the Giant over my head and I body slammed him, the wrestling world stood in awe.
This match, a matchup of this magnitude, the enormity of this match, means so much. And it would be a torch passed on to me and letting me know it's your turn, it's your time, you're the best.
Then I take the lead and I make you follow. Toast to champagne, cause I came for greed and not once.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. Mr. Ting, we have quite a lot to address in today's edition of the show.
What do you mean?
We got quite a lot of feedback for this show, and did want to bring to everyone's attention the fact that we are striving for 600 members into our official Facebook group of Review Away, which is now, thanks to maybe our most valued member, Chris Engler, has registered reviewaway.com, R-E-V-I-E-W-A-W-A-I.com, which will now forward you right to our Facebook group. And I think, Wei, this is a definite positive in terms of attracting that elusive 600 amount of members for WrestleMania.
This is a big, big moment for us. Now we are actually, we're almost like a real entity.
Well, I did have this was all great news, and then yesterday as I was finishing up reviewing WrestleMania, I looked at the number of members we had, and it was at 496. And then today, right before I went in to check, before the show, we were at 495.
I'm looking at it right now, and we're still at 496, so.
Well, someone then came back, because we went to 496 yesterday, and we're down to 495 today. So someone left.
Someone left. Why would you want to leave this?
If anyone has any
group
information in terms of who left our group, please send it to us so that Wei Ting can send a virus via email.
Yeah. No. Via real life. I will give them the swine flu.
Yes.
Or AIDS.
We don't screw around on this Facebook group. You join this group, you're here for life. And you will listen to every single podcast we produce. And you will provide feedback, and to leave, that's not good. So, you know who you are out there, and let's just hope that you were that 496th member coming back after you had a fall from the wagon. But, Wei, we did get quite a lot of feedback in terms of this show, which we'll read at the end, and I assumed based on, the law obviously based in Toronto, we probably have a high concentration of Toronto listeners. I expected we'd get quite a lot for WrestleMania X8 for this show, and we did. And we'll also later in the show get to our contest from this week, which was not successful.
Not as successful as previous contests, but that's okay. You know what? Why don't we go through some of the feedback regarding last week's show?
Okay, pull that up.
All right, so
I have the WrestleMania 18 emails here.
Well, regarding last week's show, Sean Prasad, our good friend, says, "Great review, guys. I probably rewinded 100 times to hear John's impersonation of Psycho Sid and Vince. It was hilarious. Oh, and it was great to hear some Tegan and Sarah after the review." So, you do some tremendous impersonations, not just of pro wrestlers, but of people in your daily
life. Well, thank
life.
You, Wei. If there's
if you have requests for impersonations,
no, I'm not Jason Sensation, so okay. I don't think I will be doing any impressions on the show.
From our
I'm not that good.
No, you are. You're very humble.
Let's talk about something I am great at, and that's predicting major sporting events.
That's right.
Picked off. Look out. Gets past Manning, and it's Tracy Porter taking it all the way. Touchdown, New Orleans.
Tommy Chung says, Pollock, did you realize how you called the Super Bowl outcome? Scary. And you actually did. You actually predicted this exactly the way it went. You said the Saints would come from behind with a victory, and that's what happened. How did you know?
Waiting. You know, sometimes, as you know, I am a devout football follower. And
are you?
I had this. I had the New Orleans Saints pegged to win this entire Super Bowl.
No, you didn't.
It was a random comment, and I actually had to go look back to realize that I had even said that.
I actually watched the Super Bowl with Jason and John this past weekend, and
this was your first football game you ever watched.
I think it was the first. I still have yet to see an entire football game. I only watched half of it. I just didn't know what was going on.
I've probably watched in the neighborhood of 8 to 10 football games in my life. I attended one at the Sky Dome in 2000 for a Toronto Argonauts Saskatchewan Rough Riders game. I think I left before the end of the game.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sorry. I just can't get into it.
The best part, and it's like football, I only care about it one day a year, and that's the Super Bowl. And it's more or less the hype of the, because they have programming all day long. Mm-hmm. And I'm cool to just tune in, and I will watch hours of the pregame stuff. I mean, CBS just went insane with their production for this show. Yeah. There were 50 cameras utilized for this broadcast. That, to me, is what I enjoy the most. And, I mean, you got to see the opening with the Jay-Z and the band they had.
No, I actually did not see that.
Well, they showed highlights of it later. Okay. So you got to see a bit of it.
Yeah, I was...
By the time the game comes, I could care less.
I'm incredibly impressed with the graphics that they're able to put on the field. Without them actually being there.
Yep,
we're having a discussion. Imagine what you can do with that technology, not just in sports, but in a sitcom or a talk show or even pro wrestling for that matter.
Why would you want to use it?
Maybe in the middle of the ring you want to show an image of maybe like the Ultimate Warrior coming back from you know, like how the Ultimate Warrior appeared in the mirror and Hulk Hogan's thing?
You want a hologram.
I want a hologram.
That's not what was on the football game. CNN has utilized holograms.
You can easily do a hologram using the same technology.
Why would you want to do that, though?
Well, let's say...
What is he going to do? Are wrestlers going to sell for a hologram? Is he going to throw a work punch?
A superplex from the corner into the mouth of the Ultimate Warrior inside the ring would be tremendous. That would be amazing. Anyway,
this is what you took from the Super Bowl.
Yeah, we have a bit more feedback. Matt or James? I guess this is a shared account from either a person named Matt or James. That's what it says.
Uh-huh.
Correction for John. He said Ahmed Johnson was never a number one anything. He was the first African American intercontinental champion. Does that count? Also, the white noose that Farouk had in the street fight was actually made light of during the free-for-all program before the pay-per-view. I'd like to write what Farouk said, but it was pretty bad. Even Vince and the commentators acted disgusted. And finally, we have Chris Levitt, a person who posts a lot.
Yes.
Likes to post a lot on the Facebook group. Okay. Well, here's a post that I actually did enjoy from Chris. Chris Levitt. I've just realized that the acronym for Reelway is RAW. This is like when I found out the word bed looks like a bed.
I laughed at the bed comment. However, the fact that he did not realize that Reviewaway's acronym was RAW, considering the picture of the Facebook group is the RAW logo, that's some poor attention to detail on Chris's part.
Yeah, it is.
Any more?
No, that's it.
Okay, we'll get to the rest after where we get thoughts on the WrestleMania 18 event. And this one taking place March the 17th, 2002, at Toronto's Sky Dome, now known as the Rogers Centre. It's WrestleMania 18 way, and we start off the show with a live performance by Saliva of their song Superstar.
Yeah.
I was not a fan of this song.
I was not a fan of the song nor this band. Let's get into my first reaction of getting into the arena, and I'd like to hear yours too, because we both attended this show.
Yes, we both. I guess we both would have been around 17 at the time,
or 18 actually.
18,
yeah, because our birthdays are actually the same.
Correspond with the WrestleMania years,
so we're X8 years old.
We. Why did they use X8? Was that hip?
Well, because they figured Roman numerals were too difficult for the wrestling audience to comprehend.
We can't do XVII. We have to do X8.
You can't do X7.
We can't expect too much out of our fans.
It has to be X8.
Well, I remember way that this was prior to me working with the law. So I went to this show, and I guess this would have been because I worked at a movie theater at this time, and I don't know what your childhood was like, but throughout elementary school and high school, like, there was maybe one person I knew that watched wrestling. There wasn't this big contingency of wrestling fans. Like, even in the big period with Austin and them, it's like, none of my friends really watched it. And then I started working at this movie theater, and I became friends with all these people, and they were all, like, wrestling fans. Hmm. So it was actually a group of 8 of us that went to WrestleMania. Wow. And it was a... I can't remember what we spent on tickets, but it was like $100 a ticket, something like that.
So you were probably sitting in...
we were in the 100 level, so not very close, but, I mean, decent enough.
I only started... I mean, I think I paid about the same price for my 100 level tickets. I actually bought my tickets on a pre-sale. I was really, like, you know, online and doing all that stuff, and I saw that at Ticketmaster they had a pre-sale code. So I skipped class one day to get on the phone just to ensure that I would get my seats for WrestleMania because I was that big of a fan back then. So I called up, got the code, and then got my ticket. I was so excited in the 2 months leading up to WrestleMania. I just couldn't wait. I get into the arena. My seat, we're in the 100 levels, but they're at the very last row of the 100 levels. So if you know the Skydome is huge.
It's ugly building too.
It's a nice building. I like it.
I don't.
Anyway, the Skydome is massive. It's a baseball stadium. So I got the very last row of the 100 levels, the very last row, which were actually underneath the second deck. So I'd say basically I was looking at a very narrow view of the ring. My entire overhead was covered by the second deck. I was so disappointed.
I could imagine being in like the 500 level at the Sky Dome to watch a wrestling event. Like, I can understand it for a baseball game. It's a giant vision. Like, you get to see a giant field, but a little square wrestling ring. Mm-hmm. To me, it's like I would much rather, and at 500 level, you're still probably dropping $40-$50 for those tickets. Mm-hmm. Would have much rather just stayed home and watched it on pay-per-view. I mean, 100 level, I was pretty happy with, but again, you're not seeing it. It's more just the going to the live event. Yeah. And the fact that all my friends wanted to go, that to me was kind of the interest to go. But it's just, it's amazing when you go back to being young and you talk about skipping school just to buy tickets for a wrestling event.
I was very young.
And you fast forward to when we went to WrestleMania in Chicago, and the day of the show, we called up the WWE to ask for tickets. And it's like, yeah, no problem.
And we got awesome seats that show.
We got way better seats, and we ended up selling our other ones.
And we did not.
And we got the free tickets.
And then even the last Raw that we got free tickets to in Toronto, we gave the seats away because we were too tired.
Yes, that's right. We were like, forget this. I don't want to go to the show. And we gave our tickets away. Everybody.
Oh, anyway. Saliva.
Yeah, Saliva opens up, and they just yelled, and it was called Superstar. Apparently it was a song. And from there, thankfully, it ended after 4 minutes, and we go to the opening video, which was, I thought, fantastic. And this this shows you the evolution. Last week, we recapped WrestleMania 13, where I thought the opening video was horrible. And this was a WWE high-level production, and it was pretty long. We came in with a preview of it. It was 2 minutes long. Yeah. I cut it down because it was very long.
I definitely think in terms of their video post-production team, they definitely reached their peak and continued on that peak in the year previous to
2001. No doubt. That's when they were doing all those Desire videos.
The Rock and Hogan build-up. The Rock Austin build-up with the Biscuit.
They did have a video prior to this this event where it was a Rock Desire video promoting this match, and I think it was POD they used. Just all of those videos they were doing at that time, I completely agree with you. That to me was the peak of WWE production.
I taped all those, and like not even that, but like that's Those videos, I would say, inspired a lot of people, even partly including myself, to get into video editing and doing all that.
You go online now and you see all the fans that have now created their own videos. I mean, there were just some fantastic videos the company made, and they still do a very good job now, but I don't think they've ever reached that level that they did back in 2001.
No, definitely. I will say, though, Scott Hall seemed so out of place in that video package.
It's pressure, but it's the good kind of pressure.
They had all these like guys who were legitimately WrestleMania legends. And, okay, Scott Hall, he had that ladder match with Shawn.
He was just a sore thumb in this spot. No. I completely agree. You had Rock, Hogan, Triple H, Austin, Scott Hall.
Yeah.
Sour Skittles presents WrestleMania this year, Way. Have you ever tried Sour Skittles?
I have. It's gonna cut some lives off of some years off of your life if you have too many of those, I think.
I'm not a fan of sour
Skittles. Just a pack of sugar, basically.
They opened up with just tons of signs, and one sign that I spotted just read, "I'm ready. Take my candy ass." This fan had come to the Sky Dome for their candy ass to be taken away somewhere. And then we got shots of fans at WWF New York. Do you remember that?
I do remember. I tried to stop by to see what the remnants of WWF New York on my previous trip this summer.
It's a Hard Rock now, isn't it?
I think it's a Hard Rock. It's another big
money losing venture for the company. Yeah. We go to the opening match. Way William Regal, who this was actually his second straight year of opening WrestleMania. In a useless trivia fact, defending the Intercontinental Championship against Rob Van Dam. And was it just me, or did Rob Van Dam's entrance? It's so lame. He's like, he's walking down to the ring, and he's not the thumbs, but then he's looking at the camera, and he's talking, and it's like he's having his own monologue while he isn't mic'd.
Yeah.
And it was just, I don't know.
Bret Hart does the same thing almost. He does the what?
With Bret Hart, it's much more convincing to me. With Rob Van Dam, it was just seemed silly. We saw a Tiger Driver by Regal during this match.
Mm-hmm.
Early on, Regal grabs the brass knuckles, and they were taken away from the official by the official?
No, Van Dam actually kicks them out of his hand out to the outside of the ring.
Okay, so
now it's an even match.
Yes, the brass knuckles are tossed out by Van Dam's kick, and Van Dam gets the win with a 5-star frog splash, a very average opening match, not given much time. I think it got about 6 minutes.
Six minutes and 19 seconds, I think. It was a good match, but yeah, I would have preferred it if it was much longer, and especially
these two styles don't really complement each other either.
Well, I didn't actually have a problem with it. I thought it mixed well. I mean, Regal has that very legitimate, real technical style, but I think they worked well. I mean, especially considering their roles, the face is the guy who does most of the high flying for the fans, whereas Regal really likes to slow down the action. But especially for RVD's big first IC title win, I think they should have made this longer and later on in the card. I thought for a curtain jerker, this didn't really sit right for me, especially in a city that loves RVD like Toronto.
Not to mention that Van Dam had debuted with the company the previous summer, and you consider the momentum he came in with. And I remember there was a Toronto TV taping.
That's exactly what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I think we've talked about the same taping, where prior to the show even starting, the entire Air Canada Center was chanting RVD, and it was like, fast forward 6 months, and he's opening WrestleMania in an average match. We go backstage, and Lillian Garcia is with Christian, and they show the build-up to this match, all 6 days of it. The prior edition of Raw, 6 days earlier, saw Christian turn heel on Diamond Dallas Page. And Christian apparently was doing a losing streak gimmick and defeated Billy Gunn on Raw. And that sets up Diamond Dallas Page versus Christian for the European title, with DDP was defending the title in this match?
Yes.
Or was Christian?
Yes, DDP was defending the title.
Okay, so Christian is challenging DDP for
how ridiculous, though. I mean, Christian's big. Or both of these men, they're huge, huge WrestleMania moment. DDP coming back to WrestleMania for the first time since WrestleMania 6.
Where he drove a car.
Where he drove
a pink Cadillac. Car.
Yes, and Christian wrestling in his hometown in his biggest match of his career. And they have 6 days, but the match is announced 6 days earlier.
Yeah, this was... they announced Christian is now hailing from Tampa, Florida, and then Jim Ross brought up the WrestleMania 6 connection with Diamond Dallas Page. Christian had that great opera theme at this point.
Christian! Christian! At last, you're on your own!
much prefer
Masker
it to
now on your own. Yeah, and then it goes into this new metal track. But the opening of that music, I was always a fan of.
Yeah.
For some reason, I just laughed when they announced DDP as hailing from the Jersey Shore.
Huh.
Has a completely different meaning now in 2010. Yeah, it would be a whole new gimmick for him. I was not a fan of Christian's look in this. With the
Me neither.
The long hair and the mesh shirt
just
looked so
indie.
Very indie look for him.
The short hair definitely suits him much better.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys who the short hair, it's not a positive. For him, definite positive.
Yeah, it set him apart from Edge, too, which is another big thing.
Yeah, at this point in Christian's career, during this angle, his gimmick was he threw temper tantrums. Mm-hmm. And the whole story of this match was that Christian... He had won his last match against Billy Gunn, and those temper tantrums were now over. He went for an unprettier, but it was countered. DDP went for a diamond cutter, which was also countered. And then DDP tried for a second time, and this time successfully hit the diamond cutter, getting the win. And then DDP cuts a promo saying he's happy that Christian is not throwing a tantrum because he just lost a match in front of 68,000 people on the biggest match of his life. And then he threw a temper tantrum in the ring, and this was awesome booking of Christian. Your future ECW heavyweight champion.
Yeah. Another very average match. DDP at this time, unfortunately, he had this motivational speaker gimmick.
Yes.
And I don't know, I just got the sense from watching him, he wanted nothing to do with it. He did say the line. He said it's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
But aside from that, he did his usual WCW traits, like running out into the crowd for his finish. I think he would have been much happier if he had just kept it his WCW things, if they let him do that.
Then go backstage. Jonathan Coachman is with The Rock, and The Rock cuts a tremendous promo. He gets Coach to go on his knees and say his prayers, and then he knocks Coach out and then cuts a promo on Hulk Hogan, culminating with Rock tearing off his shirt.
You will see the People's Elbow come crashing down on your chest, and Hogan, above all else, you will. You will, you will, you will, you will, good God Almighty, you will smell what The Rock is cooking.
Very, very good promo.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing surprising.
The Rock, at this, even during this interview, though, was already receiving boos from the crowd.
You could tell going back to that weekend, I think I went with a bunch of my friends to that Access thing that weekend, and...
Yeah.
It was Hogan showed up in one of the areas, and it was just the pop he got there was just huge. I think he had a pretty good idea that this guy was going to be getting a giant reaction in Toronto.
And The Rock, though, I think he was on a bit of a downturn in terms of his face reactions too. I just remember the reactions to his promos were getting kind of off, because me included, I started seeing them as kind of too repetitive and too fan friendly, and. You know,
compare that to today. I would die to have a guy like cut a promo like this each week on TV. There's nobody right now on WWE television. I think that you get CM Punk and Jericho, but those are very different styles of promos.
Mm.
Anyway, go on to third straight title match. Way Maven versus Goldust for the Hardcore title. How these two got on to WrestleMania? I had no idea about this match. I completely forget it.
The only thought going through my mind was that I paid to watch this live. I paid to see Goldust versus Maven in a Hardcore title match.
I was actually trying to contact Maven to interview him for the show this week.
Kidding.
It was like he had no contact information on his website, and then I went to his MySpace, and he hasn't updated it, and I was just like, fuck it.
Wow.
No Maven.
What would you have asked him? I'm curious.
I wanted to ask him about if you remember coming off of Tough Enough, he was really over at that point.
Yeah, like, especially that
his
Royal
first
Rumble.
Match, his first appearance in the WWE, he got a huge pop, as you said, the Royal Rumble deal with Taker, and then he just kind of he was not ready for a big spot and kind of just faded into oblivion.
No.
But that was our story involving Maven.
He had the big drop kick. That was his spot.
Well, you know what? And he completely fucked it up
in
this match.
Yeah.
All I remember, the match starts and we hear a woman yell, "Come on, Maven!" from the ringside area. Goldust had painted all the trash cans gold, as well as there was a golden shovel in this match. And I noted here that Goldust had a trash can. Maven went for the drop kick and just completely fucked it up.
He missed the trash can or something. And did you watch the live videotape, right? The videotape of the actual broadcast?
I watched the first half. I watched of the actual tape, and then I finished watching it.
I don't know if it came across to you, but because I saw the DVD and they actually edited it. They cut the angle so that it didn't look as bad.
But oh, really? I watched it, and it was all in its terrible presentation. Yeah. There was a double trash can shot, and then all of a sudden Spike Dudley runs in and pins Maven, because if you remember at this time, it was the 24/7 rule where they did 10 million title changes every week. And Spike Dudley gets the pin on Maven, wins the hardcore title, and then the late Crash Holly runs in and chases after Spike through the audience. And I was actually watching for this because I remember reading a story that some fan, as Spike Dudley was running through the audience, clotheslined Spike Dudley.
Really?
But I watched it, and there's no way to see that, and I don't think it's true. But I was watching for that and would have laughed, especially if a fan tried to pin Spike Dudley.
Oh, that would be hilarious.
If the camera was on him, that would have been great.
Like if the fan had like a friend dress up in a referee shirt and then count the three.
Fans can always make these shows fun.
That would be so funny. I didn't think this needed to be on WrestleMania at all.
No, it was just yet another title, and I'm so glad titles like the Hardcore title and European title are gone. Just complete excess. This probably wasn't on your version you watched, but we then had a Shop Zone special where you could get a WrestleMania poster, program, and t-shirt to commemorate the event way. Then we have Lillian Garcia announce, "Now to tell you the story of tonight's undisputed title match."
Another band!
Recording artist Drowning Pool, who performed this just terrible, terrible song called Tearaway.
Break!
At first, I thought this was a song about the pants with the buttons on them. But no, the song is called Tearaway. And it was just shots of the band playing, and then you had the video of your main event just on the Jumbotron, but you weren't... Why wasn't that on the screen with just the music underneath it? Wouldn't you want to get across the video for the main event? No, we just got shots of the band playing, and oh my God.
I thought they were going to tell me the story, not just play a song.
I thought, they should have had the lead singer come up and just tell a monologue about this whole backstory. And the lead singer here is also on the passed away list, yes. Dave Williams, who died later that summer. Mm-hmm. And it was I actually saw Drowning Pool live once at the Cool House.
Did they play the song?
They did. I'm sure they did.
They told you the story.
Yeah, this guy actually chugged a Jack Daniel, a bottle of Jack, on the stage.
Oh wow!
So he was
living the lifestyle.
He had his demons.
Not the last we would see of either of these bands, by the way.
No, we got way more of them later. We go backstage and Crash Holly is after Spike Dudley, and they're fighting backstage, and all of a sudden they're by these big cardboard boxes, and Al Snow comes in on a golf cart with Teddy Long in the passenger seat, and they go through the cardboard boxes. WrestleMania, folks. Then the Hurricane swoops in on a rope, and I guess we're to believe that he knocks out Spike with a kick, and it's missed. And they have a sound effect, like a whoosh, like this sound effect I have in my folder on my computer. And Hurricane pins Spike and then whooshes his way out of the camera shot and leaves with the hardcore title. This was so lame.
It felt like they're cramming everybody in to get their WrestleMania paydays. And it was an insult to me personally, because I had paid my hard-earned money to sit there and sit through this backstage shit.
We get a public service announcement telling us not to try this at home. And then for more information, go to WWFEparents.com for more information. From there, Kurt Angle versus Kane. And this was one of many matches, Wade, where I think the talent was completely utilized poorly.
Yes.
Angle versus Kane.
Yes.
At WrestleMania.
I was so disappointed when they announced this match. Last year, we had Kurt Angle versus Chris Benoit. All right, this year we get Kurt Angle versus one of the shittiest workers on the entire roster, Kane.
These two, I believe this match came out of a TV match they did, which was, it was a really, really good match because of Angle, and they decided to, they had nothing for
That's
Angle.
Right. That's right. I remember
they
that.
They did have a really good TV match, but yes. This did not reach the level of that TV match. Angle is completely jacked at this point. Like, he had to have been 260 pounds, which he's got to be about 205, 210 now in TNA. Mm-hmm. Has hair at this point as well. He cuts a promo on the Canadian figure skaters stating that if he had won his gold medals the way that those two did, he would shoot himself in the head. And if you recall at this time, I believe there was some judging infraction, and they complained and ended up getting the gold medals because of some complaint.
The French judge was was in cahoots with the French team. Or
it was
Russian,
like a
Russian
legit
team,
Montreal screw job.
It was.
In Salt Lake City at the Olympics that year.
That's right.
Kane comes out. He's still wearing the mask at this point. Right away, before the match starts, Angle hits Kane with the ring bell, which at least made sense because the bell had technically not rung yet to start the match. It's a very smart move. Every heel that comes out first should grab the ring bell and attack his opponent because they can't ring the bell to start the match. I would do this every single time if I was a heel worker. And this was a shoot.
I'm sure you'd get penalized for it eventually.
They'd have to come up with a ruling, though. I think I could get away 2 to 3 matches.
You're telling me, let's take this in a real scenario. Let's put this in a UFC fight. In a UFC fighter, you're telling me I could attack my opponent backstage and not be penalized?
It doesn't start with a bell in UFC. It
doesn't matter. I can attack my opponent with the chair.
I would maybe before Steve Mazzagatti signals the fight to start. You could, pick up Steve Mazzagatti and just run at your opponent with Mazzagatti.
I don't know.
Maybe,
I don't know.
Maybe
that.
It would not work in a shoot. It was basically built around near falls and near submissions throughout, Angle working the ankle lock throughout. He reversed a choke slam and then got into the ankle lock. And it actually finished not with a clean tap out, but Angle rolling up Kane and using the ropes to get the pinfall. Bullshit finish. So Angle gets the win, and Kane still has his heat.
This was an average match. I mean, I'll give it to the both of them. They dragged each other, Angle dragged Kane into an average match. Okay, but I was just disappointed for WrestleMania. I would have much preferred maybe a Kurt Angle versus Flair. They seemed like much more natural.
That would have been way better. That would have been way better. But I guess they weren't gonna. They had really no one for Undertaker either. But we'll get into that in just a minute here. Backstage, Hurricane is with the Hardcore title, and he's hiding in the locker room, which turns out to be the female dressing room for the Godfather's women, because if you remember, the Godfather had gone legit by this point, and they were not hoes anymore. Oh. They were his valets, I guess. And all of a sudden, these women are in the locker room, and they start taking their shirts off and comparing breast sizes. So the Hurricane is watching this behind a... what do they call those things?
I have no idea what those things are.
Those little silhouette changing areas, which are kind of odd. So he has a kendo stick, which rises as the women are taking their shirts off.
No, it was actually a mop.
Oh, it was a mop.
I think it was a mop.
Man, you pay attention to detail, way. And the Godfather comes in as the women yell, noticing the Hurricane there. And the Hurricane runs out, and the Godfather is at a loss for this pervert. And the Hurricane escapes with his title. I thought one of the hoes was going to win the title.
Yeah, that was the previous year, I think.
We then get a video for The Undertaker and Ric Flair. This video was rather funny, I found. The Undertaker wanted to face Ric Flair at WrestleMania, and Ric Flair said no. He wasn't going to fight him. So Taker attacked Arn Anderson on TV, who did a big blade job. Flair said, nope, I'm not going to fight you. Then he went to a training school and attacked David Flair, and I think he attacked him near a toilet, and he made David bleed, and this was enough. Rick was gonna have none of this. You do not attack my son David. And
who is gonna have sympathy for David Flair?
I know, at least if it was Reed. I mean, he was
Megan,
a future college wrestler. But David was a...
former WCW champion. Come on.
That son of a bitch turned on me in WCW. I made him swim in a little polluted area. Remember those angles that they did in WCW with David Flair? It was the best stuff Vince Russo has ever done in his career was with David Flair. Where they had these vignettes where they went to the Flair mansion. And David was talking about how Reed Flair, who he called Champ, he's like, Champ gets to swim in that pool over there, and they show this beautiful pool. He's like, they make me swim in that, and they show this like muddy little pool. It's great stuff. Some very, very great stuff at the time.
Fantastic.
Anyway, so in order for Ric Flair to wrestle, he had to step down as the owner of the WWE or whatever his position was, because he had defeated Vince McMahon for control of the company. So he sits down at the board of directors, and they say, if you go through with this match, we have no option but to give all control to Vince McMahon. I did not understand the logic of this. Because Ric Flair wants to wrestle a match, he cannot effectively govern the WWE, so they give it to Vince McMahon, whose gimmick at this time was, I'm bringing the NWO in to kill the company. Those were the promos he was cutting at the time.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, Ric Flair cuts the weirdest promo of his career, where he goes up to Vince, and it was like he had to drag out these sentences. He's like, at WrestleMania, I will defeat The Undertaker. And they basically said, Rick, we want you to cut a promo with no personality. All right, I'll try. I'm going to play the clip because he'll do it better justice than I can.
I think it was Flair trying to be serious.
Well, I found it just odd. That brings us to Ric Flair against The Undertaker. The Undertaker 9-0 heading into this WrestleMania way.
Uh-huh.
We got a huge blade job by Ric Flair in this match.
Yeah.
Lots of blood at this point. This, to me, was a very, very high-profile squash match because The Undertaker just beat the shit out of Ric Flair for 16 minutes of this 18-minute match. This was funny. Jerry Lawler was trying to downplay how bad Ric Flair was bleeding, saying, oh, it's his blonde hair. It makes it look worse than it really is.
What struck me about this match was they kept calling Undertaker Booger Red.
And Lawler asks at one point, what is a Booger Red?
What is a Booger Red? What is it?
I don't know what a Booger Red is.
And why did Undertaker get that nickname?
I guess it's something JR bestowed upon The Undertaker.
And
the Undertaker was a heel at this point.
It never took off for some reason.
Yeah, Undertaker's a heel in 2002. I don't know if that was the wisest of choices.
Yeah.
Ric Flair finally evened things up by obtaining a pipe and started attacking The Undertaker. This was the biggest pop up until this point in the show when Arn Anderson ran in and gave a spine buster to The Undertaker. And then Arn got busted open again. He was wearing a black shirt, which was poor planning on Arn's part.
He was
for a blade job.
He was the third man to cut himself open in this match. Taker had done it as well.
A lot of blood at this point in time for the WWE. Arn's run-in did not prove to be a game changer, and the tombstone was hit by The Undertaker on Flair for the win, and The Undertaker goes 10-0.
Yeah, it was just a long brawl. It was okay.
Yeah, it was a good match.
Yeah.
Not blow-away match, but...
The thing is, these are all just very average matches. They're not worthy of a WrestleMania, especially one that I personally attended.
The comparison point, they are coming off arguably the best WrestleMania of all time the year prior, so I think everyone had their expectations very high for a follow-up. And this was they were selling, big names on this card and not so much great in-ring. They go to a promo for a WWF Before They Were Stars video. And then from there, we're backstage. Michael Cole is with Booker T, who's wearing glasses. And his gimmick is he's an idiot. And he said that he was he has his master's or he has his PhD in something because he wrote his own paper comparing himself to Einstein on the theory of relatives.
Yeah.
To contrast to Einstein's theory of relativity.
Mm-hmm.
And this was all stemmed from Booker T appearing on The Weakest Link, where he
did terrible.
He was really bad.
What October federal holiday celebrates the discovery of America?
Repeat that.
What October federal holiday?
Thanksgiving.
No, Columbus Day.
Terrible answers.
He did so bad, they played the clips on Howard Stern, and Howard Stern ended up making fun of them. And then they eventually had one of their reporters go up to Booker T at an autograph signing and ask Booker T some random trivia questions just to mess with him afterwards. It was very funny.
So WWE, seeing this, thought, hey, let's make him an idiot.
Well, not only that, but what else was this feud based on?
Yo,
Japanese people, what's the deal with your nasty hair? Just because you know kung fu doesn't mean you know shampoo. But that's all about to change thanks to new Yakamoshi shampoo.
Shampoo, eh? Because there was a big shampoo commercial that some broadcasters in Tokyo were shooting, and they had it narrowed down to Booker T or Edge to be their spokesman. So how are they going to decide who gets the shampoo commercial way? They were going to have a match at the biggest show of the year featuring Edge, who 12 years ago attended WrestleMania live as a child with his mother, coming back as a WWE star to fight for a shampoo commercial. Creative at its worst. This was a gigantic waste of Edge. Why was he even on this show?
Well, he had
in this capacity.
He had to have been on this show.
Well, he had to be on this show, but why in this?
Why did they have to introduce shampoo into this feud? They could have had a perfectly regular match under regular circumstances.
Edge versus Christian.
That would have been tremendous. But they had already done that match, King of the Ring or some of the other pay-per-views. Anyway,
Edge came out to his Rob Zombie theme at this point, where I forgot that he had this. And the best sign of the entire show, they began to lock up, and a guy in like the third row had a sign, "They are fighting over shampoo." This is one of the best signs I've ever seen at a wrestling
show.
Says
it all.
Perfect. Right on the hard camera. Great.
For some reason, you did not see that later on.
No, it disappeared magically. What can you say about this match? They gave them all of 6 minutes. Booker T hit a spin-a-rooney. Edge went for a spear, which got a two count. Then Edge did a spin-a-rooney, which looked horrible. He hit the Edgecution, which was an implant DDT, and gets the win. Very short match. Very lame, I thought. And the whole backdrop of this comedy match, it was like, this is the best you can come up with for Edge.
Just no heat for the storyline. How about the simple storyline of this kid making it 12 years since coming as a fan, now wrestling in his hometown, WrestleMania.
I'm sure, granted, it doesn't have the drawing power of Rock and Hogan, but at the same time, you had the story that Edge, this Hulk Hogan fan, came to cheer on Hogan 12 years ago, and when you look at it, Rock was getting ready to leave. So, yes, you're going to get one big buy, but I mean, you could have argued in favor of Edge and Hogan. And granted, that match wasn't going to draw to that level. Yeah. The fact is that this is the next idea we have for you, is against Booker T in a shampoo match. It was just such a lame usage of Edge on this show.
Yeah.
Backstage with the Hurricane, and the coach comes to interview him, and then Hurricane's sidekick, Mighty Molly, comes in, and she says, off to the Hurricycle, and as Hurricane is about to leave, she clocks him with a frying pan, and Molly wins the hardcore title.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Another title change. Oh, this feels like a broken record, talking about guys who have been wasted on this show. The year prior, WrestleMania 17 way did 1.4 million buys. 1.04 million buys. Headlined by Steve Austin and The Rock. This year, we got Steve Austin against Scott Hall. Holy shit. This was bad. I noted that Hall looks like a crack addict in the graphic. In the video leading up to this, they mention they have a sound clip from Hall who says, "Nobody embarrasses Scott Hall."
He embarrasses himself.
He does it all the work himself.
Yeah.
Kevin Nash, who may be the smartest man in the industry, got a WrestleMania payoff by being in Scott Hall's corner for this match because he was injured at the time. Mm. Probably got a very healthy paycheck. We should mention the backstory here. The original plan for this WrestleMania was Austin and Hogan, but Austin didn't want that match and therefore went to The Rock. During this match, I mean, Austin just did not seem to be into this match. I don't think he was happy, and he actually took off and didn't appear on TV the next night, and actually took like 2 weeks off where he just went home.
Sure, understandably so.
Because he was very upset with the creative heading into this WrestleMania, as would I if I was Stone Cold Steve Austin and I was facing Scott Hall midway through the show. What can we say about this match, Way? Nash pulls out the referee, elbow drops the referee, and there is no disqualification apparently in this match.
Yeah, apparently not. Then we have another referee come in, another near fall, and then Nash attacks him as well.
No DQ.
No DQ.
It's never announced. Austin hits a big stunner and gets the win, and then after the match, stuns Hall about two more times. And then afterwards, Austin disappears from TV for 2 weeks, and he was not a very happy man.
Austin just stormed out of the arena.
This was booked like a blow-off. I thought Scott Hall was done after this show, the way they just blew off his character in this. And there were even arguments that they wanted to put Scott Hall over in this match, which would have been a nightmare considering this guy. He got fired like 2 months later, I believe.
Are you kidding me? The NWO had lost all its steam in less than a month. They debuted in the prior month.
No
Way Out. And by this point, nobody cared, really. But besides the Hogan involvement, nobody cared for the NWO. I think they would have served better Hall and Nash in a tag team match. But yeah, Nash was injured at the time. Whatever. This was a waste of Austin for sure.
I would have put Edge opposite Hall on this show.
That would have been that wouldn't have been any better, but whatever.
We go to a piece on WWF Access over the weekend where we got such sound clips as RVD stating, "This is nuts, but nuts in a good way."
What did you think of Access? What did you think of your time there?
I don't really remember it that well. I went there with a bunch of friends, and I mean, some of the stuff was cool to see. Took some photos and stuff like that, but
I thought it was so lame. Yeah. I paid $50, and
that's how much it was.
Yeah, I lined up. The lineup was like an hour long.
That's right. They did these things. They did the autograph signings where you would line up for a guy, and then the guy you lined up for, they would change them on the hour, but they don't tell you this beforehand, because I remember me and my friends were in line, and I think it was Kurt Angle. They take Kurt Angle out, and they put, like, I think Dean Malenko back in, and I think they were like, "Who did he just leave?" And I tried to look up, and I see Dean Malenko. I'm like, "Oh, no, it's Kurt Angle." They look the same.
That's hilarious.
I can't remember any worthwhile stories, though. I would have loved to have done commentary with Michael Cole.
That would have been fun.
I wish I did that and had the tape, because I would have pulled the audio and,
that would have been
and
hilarious.
Played it here.
The autographs I ended up with for the evening were, and you can count them, Lance Storm, X-Pac, Jonathan Coachman.
Wow. You really hit the jackpot, didn't
I did.
You? I think I had, I'm not a big autograph guy, but there was like no lineup, so I went for, I think I met Patterson and Briscoe, and I think there was one other one, and I can't remember.
Well, for those of you who do want to know all my thoughts, I actually wrote up a report.
Oh, really?
On my day at Access.
Oh, that's wicked.
I looked it up, and it's still there on onewrestling.com. I will post up.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, I will post up the link on the Facebook.
That is awesome.
To read.
That is awesome.
An 18-year-old me, very embarrassed, but you know what?
Is it detailed?
Enjoy it. It's quite detailed.
Oh, I cannot wait to read this.
I think I actually saw Brock wrestle, too.
Brock was they did have matches going on there, and Brock debuted the night after WrestleMania, so yeah. I'm sure you saw him there.
Brock wrestled Crash Holly or Spike Dudley or something.
Wow, you saw the future UFC heavyweight champion.
And I did not give a shit at all. I lined up for Jonathan Coachman's autograph, Xbox autograph, too.
We had in the same piece, we had a girl crying for The Undertaker, and then we had Stacy Keibler talking about this. They did these, what would you even call them? Metal. They take these body prints.
These metal sculptures.
Yeah, metal sculptures, and they'd have Big Show's hand and like other
Stacy Keibler's ass.
And Stacy stated that, it's really interesting watching people posing with my butt and how they touch it. Very, very creepy. Because I saw tons of guys going up to this, and they just put their hand on Stacy's ass and take pictures with it.
Well, that's what you're supposed to do. It's encouraged.
So creepy. Next up, we have the tag titles on the line. Is it just me, or does it feel like almost every other match was a title match on this show?
They had a lot of titles back then.
Holy fuck.
Yeah.
Billy and Chuck defending the titles against the Dudleys, the Hardys, and the APA. I loved Billy and Chuck. I thought their gimmick was awesome at the time. You were not a fan.
I was not a big fan. I mean, it gave them something. It gave them something. It was better than your, like, the APA, for instance. I did not give a shit about the APA. But I did not like their in-ring work whatsoever. That's it.
The Dudleys come out first, and their theme song is performed live by Saliva with their return. and it featured the Dudleys coming out and like headbanging with Saliva, while Josie Scott, the lead singer of Saliva, was dancing with Stacy Keibler and just like started groping her, and this was uncomfortable. She just started dancing in front of him, so he decided to go for a glory grab on her.
He missed access, so he wanted.
Well, he got other access.
Yes.
Lawler notes that his favorite tag team is Stacy's Legs. Clever. The Hardys come out next, and boy, has Matt Hardy aged. I guess it has been 8 years, but
yeah,
man, he's aged. What can we say about this match? It wasn't the longest of matches.
It was an elimination match. I think I missed half the eliminations. I wasn't even aware that APA were eliminated.
Yeah, there's a weird spot where Jeff is distracted by Stacy, who gets on the apron. She hikes up her skirt and is showing off her ass, and Jeff starts like moving around and like dancing as he sees this, and then goes up and just smacks her bare ass, then turns her around, kisses her, and then pie faces her off the apron to the floor. And I was like, this is not a tremendous message that the babyface is sending. Word. It's like, I'm going to violate you, yeah, and then I'm going to just throw you to the ground. And it was just, she's the heel.
Yeah, well, she was asking for it,
John. All right. This was actually the last time the Hardys ever teamed at a WrestleMania event. The Dudleys are eliminated after Devon is thrown through a table on the floor, and then Jeff hits a swanton on Bubba for the win. I missed the APA getting eliminated. They got eliminated at some point in this match. And I also noted in this match, I got distracted. The crowd was not lit very well. You look at the 500 level, and you can't even see people. It just was, it was very dark.
Maybe they ran out of the lights for this setting.
Billy Gunn hit a belt shot on Jeff, and Chuck pins Jeff Hardy, and Chuck and Billy retain the tag titles.
I just did not care for the outcome of this.
He's just throwing everyone onto the card. No one really had any programs going into this.
Again, I hate to do this again, but contrast this with the previous year's TLC 2.
Yeah.
One of the best tag matches on WrestleMania of all time, and this year we get this.
Backstage, Scott Hall is talking to Kevin Nash and says he's better than Steve Austin. Hulk Hogan comes in, gets a pop, and he asks him to stay in the back because he has to find out if he can do this tonight by himself. Then we cut to Molly, who is frantically running down a corridor, and there's a door where there's a bottom and a top to it, and the top gets flung right into her head, and she takes a huge bump. Like, this hits her clean in the head, and it's a very cool shot.
Because it looked great.
The opening then opens where you just see the guy's legs, and then it's Christian, who he kneels down and then pins Molly and wins the hardcore title. I thought that one was well done.
This was good. This was the only cool thing to come out of this hardcore championship thing. Yeah.
From there, we go to what really was the main event of WrestleMania, The Rock versus Hulk Hogan. This is the match that sold the show, in my opinion. Probably should have gone on last. They show a brief recap of it, and there was the great build-up for this where they had both guys in the ring on that edition of Raw where the fans were chanting Rocky and then Hogan. It was very, very good. And then afterwards, they did this stupid angle where they put Rock into an ambulance and attacked it with a Hummer.
A semi.
And The Rock returns 3 weeks later without a scratch on him. I hated that ambulance thing, but the in-ring thing was awesome when they set it up. Hogan comes out, gigantic pop, and Hogan, the ever-professional, completely decides to play babyface.
Were we into the entrances?
Just the entrances.
It was a real shame watching this on the DVDs because they had to edit out the track. They couldn't put the NWO music. Did he come out to the NWO music or?
He came out to the NWO music.
Yeah, they had to edit that out.
What did they play?
They played some generic something that
sounded really
fake. Yeah, so it's a real shame because the crowd reaction for this alone was worth.
It was
watching
awesome.
This DVD for. So if you can track down an original videotape of the show, I definitely recommend doing that.
Yeah, Rock comes out. The atmosphere and the commentary for this was just amazing. Hogan plays complete babyface, even though when I interviewed him, he remembers things very differently, that Rock was panicking and Hogan was the veteran who calmed down Rock during this match as the fans were turning on Rock. It was very different watching this. A guy walked by with a sign that said Angel 316, and I swear it was the biggest sign I've ever seen in my life. It was huge. It was like bigger than like a NBA backboard. again, this was the heat for this was just off the charts. And this match, you can tell certain matches that have Pat Patterson's fingerprints all over it, where this was clearly put together well in advance. It's not like they did anything crazy, because Hogan, even at that time, was very limited. Mm-hmm. But it was like everything they did got a huge reaction.
Everything. I mean, this was definitely a great example of using star power to work the crowd alone. From the moment that they had the stare down, and even the simple tie-up, got a huge reaction. From the moment that Hogan was able to push and overpower Rock, the crowd was going nuts for Hulk Hogan.
This is what, I mean, a lot of older guys will talk about in terms of being a good worker and how you can do all crazy high spots and stuff. To me, this match kind of typifies that you don't have to necessarily be doing everything crazy. If you have two stars that are mm-hmm. over to this degree, mm-hmm. it's like you can get away with doing the least and get the most out of a reaction. Mm-hmm. And that this was not a great wrestling match by any stretch.
No.
But to me, it's like, how can you say this was horrible? To me, it's like, at the end of the day, it's the reaction you're going by.
Exactly.
It did gigantic business, and I have never in my life been to a match that had more heat than this match. Like,
yeah.
It was shaking in our section. Whole match, it was unbelievable.
Everybody in the arena was standing. We're talking 70,000 people standing up and chanting. I think it was a bit, for me at least, it was a little... It seemed like the crowd wasn't fully on Hogan's side to start off with. There was still a lot of Rock.
It's probably
fans.
A 70-30 split,
but
60-40.
But as the match progressed, you can tell, especially when Hulk started hulking up, doing all that, it was amazing.
I don't care what anyone says, Hulk Hogan was just a brilliant manipulator in this match, because he knew exactly how the crowd was reacting, and he just worked everything out of them. So by the end of this match, no one gave a shit that he lost this match. Hulk Hogan came off of it. To me, he might as well have won this match, because he was the star at the end of this thing.
Well,
but,
see, like, is that a criticism? Because like that
no,
for me
it's
a good thing.
It depends how you're looking at it. If your goal of WWE management here is putting The Rock over in this match and establishing him as the guy that is now the focal point of this industry, of this company, mm-hmm. then it's completely a guy going into business for himself. At the other side, if I'm Hulk Hogan, I can't fault the guy for the way he worked this match. He worked this match 100% as a babyface.
But I think the audience determined a lot of that too. You know, like even if Hogan had done more traditionally heel things, the audience, you could tell, did not want to boo him. The audience was going to cheer him regardless, even for a lot of the eye gouging and a lot of the heel things that he was doing, the whipping of the strap. All that.
We should go through this. It built up to a sharpshooter spot by Rock,
which I booed personally. It looked so bad.
The Rock was doing this for a while, where he was using the sharpshooter, and it was not the.
It was an ugly looking sharpshooter, and especially doing it in Canada in the context of this match. That was a huge insult to all Canadians.
Hogan came back and hit a rock bottom of his own. He then, later on, for the Hulk up spot, hit a leg drop, and it was a two count. Crowd was going insane at this point. Tried a second leg drop and missed. Rock comes back with two rock bottoms and then hits the people's elbow for the win. And by the end of it, the crowd was pretty much just applauding this match. And I think Rock got a lot of his steam back, babyface-wise.
Yeah.
And then the post-match really was just... It was the Hulk Hogan show.
It was the Hulk Hogan show. Nash and Hall come out, and they solidify Hogan's face turn with Hall and Nash attacking Hogan, and Rocky coming out for the save, and then they do the pose down. My question, though, do you think the Pat Patterson, whoever it was, expected this type of reaction going into this match?
I think they had to. I think they definitely expected it.
Yeah. So
you had that vibe all weekend long with Hulk Hogan in Toronto, that it was going to be that kind of reaction. And you can tell clearly, based on the way the finish was booked with Hall and Nash coming in, that the plan was Hogan goes babyface after this match. So to that degree, I mean, I'm sure most of the match was somewhat put in advance of Hogan coming out babyface, but I think a lot of it as well was just... Hogan is probably one of the smartest guys when it comes to doing a job, And I brought this up in my interview with him in terms of his losses to Warrior and Rock. Mm-hmm. He was the focal point at the end of the match. It wasn't the other guy that went over. And it was weird the way they booked this, because if you remember at this time, after this match, Rock was going off to do a movie, and Hogan ended up getting a title shot at the next pay-per-view.
And he got the title.
And he gets the title. Oh. So it was almost, it was strange booking of this match, but it was, I don't think it really mattered who won this match by the end of it, because both guys were very, very over, and Hulk Hogan was just at a peak of popularity for his comeback here. Mm-hmm. So afterwards, they do a whole posing routine, Rock and Hogan, and then they leave together. And I think the crowd, there was no energy left in this crowd after this match.
Mm-mm.
And yet they still had two matches to get through, so good
luck.
This was
the ninth match in the show.
Yes.
There were 11 matches on this card.
That's a lot. Yeah. They show the Big Show at WWF New York. That was his role for WrestleMania.
Was he not injured at the time?
I don't know if he was injured. At one point, remember, he was sent down to Ohio Valley, but I think that was way prior to this, so he could have been injured at the time.
Yeah.
Crowds announced at 68,237. And from there we go to the women's title match. Jazz defending the title against Lita and Trish Stratus. Lita comes out and she does this dance that the best example would be the Elaine Benes dance from Seinfeld. She should not be dancing. She came out to a song by a group called Boy Hits Car off their CD Forcible Entry.
Forcible Entry, yes, which was heavily pumped throughout the show. These poor women, that's all I kept thinking.
They were just in a death spot here. There was no chance they were getting the crowd back. Just silence during this match. Bit of a botch spot when Trish hit a back body drop. Lita went to deliver a back body drop to Trish, and Trish's landing was just, she landed in Saskatchewan after this back body drop. Fisherman suplex off the top rope by Jazz. Very impressive, and scored the win on Lita. So at least a surprise finish there with Jazz retaining the title. I was a huge fan of Jazz at this time. She
Jazz
was fantastic.
Tremendous. Yeah, her moveset, everything, it was cool. This was a very decent match, and on a lesser show, this would have been much more memorable. But here, it was...
Whoever was in this spot, it was destined for failure. Yeah. And unfortunately, the women, more often than not, were given that spot. Backstage, Christian has a cab ready.
You know what, John? Just going back to last week, I think this would have been a decent spot for that hardcore, that Maven Goldust match. A match that I don't think anybody would have cared for anyway, but...
But you'd have to do all the title changes way.
Well...
You had to get all those in.
Maybe ignore the title changes and whatever.
Christian gets a cab, and he's... All of a sudden, Maven... sneaks up behind Christian, rolls him up and wins, and then leaves in the cab with the hardcore title. So Maven, at the end of the day, is still the hardcore champion. Congratulations. Main event time, Way. Chris Jericho defending the Undisputed Championship against Triple H. There is no recap of this video because apparently the story was already told to us by Drowning Pool. This was... For my money, the worst build-up for any WrestleMania main event in history.
Mm.
It featured Chris Jericho playing Cabana Boy to Stephanie McMahon.
Mm-hmm.
There was at one point, didn't they run over a dog? Lucy?
I don't remember.
This was horrible. This whole build-up. I couldn't believe that Hunter was involved in this build-up. You had such a great story of Hunter blowing out his quad with Jericho in that match. You're pairing Stephanie now with Jericho, and this could not have been fumbled worse.
They even had Stephanie go through a pregnancy angle, and then that culminated in a wedding, which turned out to be false because Stephanie wasn't actually pregnant. Just completely overbooked. Horrible.
Triple H comes out to a live rendition of Here Comes the Pain by Drowning Pool, which... was not Triple H's entrance theme at this point in time, and therefore got zero pop coming out.
Yeah.
Why would you change a guy's music on the biggest show of the year?
They have the band here.
Oh yeah, you have to have them live. That's great. They sounded terrible too in a giant stadium like that.
I didn't like the song, but anyway.
Stephanie comes out in Jericho's corner. The left quad was taped for Triple H to kind of sell that because on the SmackDown going into this, it was attacked by Chris Jericho, and they teased that he would not be at 100% for WrestleMania. Hunter teases the pedigree on Stephanie McMahon but is saved by Chris Jericho. story of the match was both working the other guy's leg, which is not traditionally the kind of story you tell in a match that's in front of this large of an audience. Mm. They did I guess this was a kind of a subtle tribute to Bret Hart with Chris Jericho between the figure four on the post mm-hmm. for Triple H, and it definitely worked into the story with the quad. And then they did a spot with the walls on the announce table from that same Raw in San Jose where Triple H tore the quad muscle. Triple H, it builds up to a big money spot where he delivers the pedigree to Stephanie, and then the finish comes when Jericho is slingshot into the ropes. He launches onto the second rope, jumps back into a pedigree, and Hunter gets the win and should have been giving 10% of his payoff to Jim Ross, who sold this title change like no other.
The crowd was very, very unresponsive for this match, unfortunately. And it was really more about Hunter and Steph than anything. Jericho,
you know, these kind of two, it was, you know, there was a big controversy going into this show that they were discussing all week of which match should close the show, and they were all angling for, I mean, Hunter at least, to go on last because it's the title match, and, you know, in hindsight, they should have just gone midway through.
I suppose,
it hurt their match. And, you know, this isn't the first time. WrestleMania last year, it was the same deal where Randy Orton and Triple H closed the show, and that crowd was dead, dead for that match.
When you just think about the matches themselves, never mind the amount of star power, but just think about the matches themselves and the way they're booked. Here you have Rock versus Hogan, just a very pure match between two people who only want to see who's the best. Hogan wants to see if he's still the man. Then you have a title shot, which involves a third person in Stephanie that should not be involved, and then a whole bunch of other shit, like fetuses and
it
dogs.
Was just so, it was so overbooked, it wasn't effective at all, and it was just such a poor, like, that title run by Jericho at this point, it was just so poorly done, in my opinion, and obviously there were reasons for those circumstances, but I thought it was just very lame. And actually, one of my buddies, my friend Brad, who actually, he went to WrestleMania with us
year.
Was there. He was one of the guys I went with, and he went to the washroom midway through the match, and he came back, and Hunter was posing with the title. He missed the finish of WrestleMania. Anyway, so let's first of all, your rating for that. I'm giving it a 4.5 out of 10,
really?
And 4.2 of that is for Rock and Hogan. Because, to be honest, this was a really bad WrestleMania overall.
Yeah.
And I think some people will disagree because they were there live, maybe. But to me, it was just that match was the only it was an unbelievable atmosphere for. But for me, one match doesn't make WrestleMania. Just like WrestleMania 13, it was a one match show.
Well, I'm surprised you rated it that much less than 13, though. I mean, the
what
match,
did I say for 13?
I think you said 6.5 for 13.
Well, that was a fantastic match, even if. Even if you watched it on mute.
I give this one a 7 out of 10. The Rock-Hogan match definitely was the highlight, but the rest of the card was just average. It didn't offend me, but it was just average. In terms of the matchmaking, given the roster they had, the potential for matchups that they could have had for this match, this was the biggest, in terms of star power, the most that they've had.
Yeah, but I'd argue that star power was terribly booked on this show.
You look
at all the stars, and these were horrible matches that were put together outside of Hogan and Rock.
Yeah.
And to me, you take out Hogan and Rock, this is a very below average regular pay-per-view. It was the WrestleMania setting, which to me, the fact this was WrestleMania, I think your expectations should be even higher. And I think it was terrible use of booking guys. Angle and Kane, Undertaker and Flair, Hall and Austin. I mean, that to me, there's no reason you couldn't have done, I know they did this program the year prior, but Angle Austin on this show. I mean, put in something that at least is going to give you some quality matches and, you know, feature these stars prominently. I completely agree with a ton of star power on this show, but not used effectively.
Yes, I just remember the weeks leading up to it, I had my ticket ready to go to the show, and as the matches revealed themselves, I was just getting progressively more and more disappointed, unfortunately. It did not live up to my expectations, you know.
All right, let's find out what you guys thought of the show. We got quite a bit of feedback here, and we'll also quickly announce our winner of the contest from this past week. Ben Brisebois, X8 was the first Mania to happen after I stopped caring about wrestling. Looking at this card now, I know the only match I would have cared about at all at the time was Jericho Triple H. Maybe I should go back and see what I missed, but I'd rather just hear John and Way review it. They were there, and they're both way more observant than I am. Mark Cardoso, X8 weekend was memorable time for me. But not just the event itself. The Sunday, me and my buddies killed some time off at the Eaton Center, and seeing wrestling fans in their hats and shirts walk around like tourists was fascinating. While waiting to get into the Sky Dome, a crowd of us wanted to sing wrestling entrance theme songs to kill time, along with the infamous chant of Pass the Doobie. Kyle Williams, X8 was for sure an awesome time. When my buddies and I got dropped off in Toronto, within a second of getting out of the van, we got offered tickets from a scalper for the event, which I found hilarious. The mood around the dome was electric, even with the shitty weather. While waiting to get inside, there were tons of woos, whats, and Hogan chants. At one point, there was a It's 5:30 chant, which was the time the doors should have opened. Now, although my particular seats were far from ringside, we were situated beside the top of a ramp, which was somewhat of a bonus because several superstars exited beside the ramp, so we got to interact with them off camera, which was cool. An example being after the Sunday Night Heat match, Test, Lance Storm, and Mr. Perfect versus Too Cool, we had loud chants for Lance and Perfect and even Test, and we totally pissed off Too Cool. Anywho, great night overall. Graham McPhail writes, this is more in regards to our contest. In the late 90s, a relative went to the U.S. on holidays, and knowing I was a wrestling fan, was thoughtful enough to bring me back a t-shirt. A Perry Saturn WCW t-shirt. It was literally just him posing in a jacket under the word Saturn in a generic font and is officially the worst t-shirt in history. There's a tiny chance that it is actually still in the attic of my parents' house, along with assorted other junk I've never taken away. From Rohan Unrau. Excellent show. I don't have photographic proof of this, but in 1994 at a house show in Winnipeg, I bought a Lex Luger Made in the USA hat for $20, an item so obscure that I don't think an image of one exists on the net. I wore it to school thinking I was the shit. I was mocked so horribly that I still tear up a bit when I rehash that once repressed memory. And finally, from Fidel Alvarez, good show last week, guys. I still think I should get half a point for picking Evan Bourne as my second choice for being entry number one. Well, he wasn't entry number one, so sorry. Had to be a little tough there. Can't believe you guys didn't talk about the Legion of Doom actually bringing out a kitchen sink to the ring yet never using it. Anyway, WrestleMania 18 was the last time I bought a WrestleMania. I remember having all my friends over and all of us making out when... sorry. I remember having all my friends over and all of us marking out when Hogan hulked up on The Rock. Oh, imagine that. Pretty cool memory. My favorite moments. The King asking JR what a booger red is. Booker T talking about his thesis on Einstein's theory of relatives. Classic. Hurricane's stupid backstage segments that still make me laugh. And wondering why those fans didn't care that Triple H basically spits on them during the fan access recap. He did. If that was me, I'd be pissed. Quick question. Do you think McMahon ever thought about making Rock Hogan the main event only to have Trips talk him out of it? As for future reviews, how about WrestleMania 2, which took place from three arenas, or WrestleMania 9 with the bonus Hogan championship win? Keep up the great work. From Fidel, don't call me Castro Alvarez in San Francisco.
Thank you very much for your feedback, guys. We'll definitely get to some of those manias in the weeks leading up.
Yes, but first off, Wade, before we announce what we'll review next week, we did do a very poorly received contest last week about who that was going to be my pick as well. I assume that's yours.
Well, let's
we'll review them first. But we asked you to take some pictures of yourself wearing shitty wrestling merchandise and post it online. Now, I imagine. Maybe it was asking a lot to take pictures and then upload them, so we understand this was not the best contest of our history. But nonetheless, a handful, and I do mean a handful of you, three people posted, so this was great. So we're going to review each one, and then we'll pick our winner. So if you entered, you have a 33% chance of winning. We start off with Mark Cardoso, who's wearing a Dead Man license plate t-shirt, Dead spelled D-E-D, and wearing what looks to be a European replica championship belt. That's a horrible t-shirt and the least desired belt I think any fan would want to buy. So yeah. That's pretty bad. What do you think about that, Way?
I mean the shirt is awful. It's a god awful shirt.
Looks pretty worn.
But I think the belt's kind of cool.
All right.
It'd be
okay. What do we have next? What do we have next, Way?
We have Warren Caney, who's showing off a photo of him and his buddy wearing a Stone Cold chest shirt.
Yes, where it's literally like the flaps of his vest and the chest. And I have never seen these before,
Me
but
neither.
They're awesome.
And apparently one of our listen, one of the commenters, Nazar Hamoud, says, funny story about those Stone Cold chest shirts. I won one from the law. I think it was 98 or 99. I won that and some fake tattoos and WWE music, the volume 4.
Wow. Well, there you go. So, the law is responsible for some of these shirts being distributed to the public.
American Donnie responsible for giving some of these shirts out to the world.
Yes. And then we have from Andy Black, a Road Dog action figure that looks nothing like Road Dog. This is like a jacked up Brian Lee.
It's a scary looking figure or whatever it is.
Not a overweight pothead like Road Dog.
It looked more like Austin, actually.
Or Val Venus.
Yeah, yeah.
Not anything like Road Dog. So nothing those like are our three entrants. I am clearly voting for the chest, guys.
I am too. Yeah. I am too. Just if I were to see anybody walk down the street.
Their poses are fantastic. Yeah, I think they look so happy.
Yes.
So, Warren, congratulations. You are the winner. We will be sending you out a prize. Not T-shirts, but we will be sending you out a prize. So thanks to the three of you who entered our contest. We promise our next contest will hopefully be more of a success. Next week we will be reviewing. I thought we would take a bit of a break from WrestleMania because we are about 7 weeks away from WrestleMania. So we do have lots of time to review WrestleManias because there is a very obscure pay-per-view in February of 2002 that I actually taped, and it was from a very little-known promotion called WWA. I can't even remember what it stood for. And they presented a show called Revolution, featuring most of the guys that were in WCW and were not hired by WWE. And this was just prior to TNA launching. So it's a pay-per-view. They ran live in Las Vegas at the Aladdin Casino.
World Wrestling All-Stars.
World Wrestling All-Stars. And we're going to review that next week. And it should be a lot of fun because this was a show that is not too well remembered, and I think for good reasons. But it's got some interesting stuff on there.
Boy, Randy Savage. I look forward to that.
So we'll do that next week. As always, go join our group, reviewaway.com, which we can now say rather than having to get the spelling out for the Facebook group. Thanks very much to Chris Engler for that. And be sure to post feedback up on our wall for any of our shows, and we will continue to take requests for any shows you'd like us to review in the next couple of weeks. And Wei Ting taking us out is going to be what?
Well, since this was a very nostalgic review for me, I'd like to go back to a time when I was a mere 18 years old and listening to one of my favorite bands at the time, Weezer. So I'd like to go out with Weezer and El Scorcho, which actually contains an ECW reference in the lyrics. So here you go.
Public enemy, why you wanna go and do me like that? Come down on the street and dance with me. I'm a lot like you, so please, hello, I'm here, I'm waiting. I think I'd be good for you, and you'd be good. You never heard of them. How cool is that? So I went to your room and read your diary. Watching one leg drop New Jack to a press table. And then my heart stopped listening to Cho Cho San. Fall in love all over again. Yeah. already scared to say I'm falling for you. Cause I think we'd make a good team, and you would keep my fingernails clean. But that's just a stupid dream that I won't realize, cause I can't even look in your eyes without shaking. And I ain't begging, I'll bring home the turkey if you bring home the bacon. Yeah.